I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times. An estimated 130,000 men and women are hourly workers in the retail, hospitality, and food service industries in Philadelphia, making those companies major city employers. Many of those workers have little or no control over their schedules because their hours are unpredictable. And that means it's tough to manage a budget and care for the family and have some semblance of a work-life balance. And since these are low-wage jobs, it's tough to keep your head above water. City Councilwoman at Large Helen Gim introduced the Fair Workweek Bill that will be voted on later this month on November 29th. It calls for these employers to give their workers advance notice about their schedule, compensation for last-minute schedule changes, a chance to work additional hours, and protection from retaliation. Today, what this bill would mean for workers, for business owners, and the city's overall economy. And joining us, the aforementioned City Councilwoman at Large, Helen Gim. Helen, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. Also with us is Earlene Bly. She's a housekeeper at the Wyndham Hotel. She's also a union organizer at the Philadelphia Marriott downtown, and she's been in housekeeping for more than 25 years here in Philadelphia. Earlene Bly, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. And Mark Price, rounding out our trio of guests here in our Philadelphia studio, a labor economist at the Keystone Research Center, took the train from Harrisburg to be with us this morning. Mark Price, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Helen, let me begin with you. Why scheduling? Why not wages or benefits? Why schedules?
Yeah, great question, Marty. So I came into City Council with a firm belief that we needed to have an aggressive anti-poverty agenda. I'm also very aware that there are things that we can and can't do as a municipal authority. I can't raise the minimum wage, for example. We're stuck at $7.25 an hour,
right?
And we're preempted from doing so by Harrisburg, which I think is an absolute atrocity. And I think our wages are our poverty wages at this point. But we can do other things, and that's one of the things that we've been noticing across the country about municipal authorities and those of us who are really committed to recognizing that a strong economy really has to benefit everybody. It can't just benefit the most elite and the wealthiest of people, that it really has to lift up everybody. And in a city like ours, where we have such intractable poverty, I can't do that by simply relying on charity. We especially have to recognize that poverty comes with concurrent serious issues of hunger, eviction, and resultant instability that impacts my job as a legislator and as a caretaker of the city. So we took a look at scheduling, and what we know is that we worked with the researchers at the University of Berkeley and found that 80% of workers in Philadelphia who work part-time at some of the largest and wealthiest corporations in our city and in the country, 80% of them don't have a regular daytime work schedule. Right. And because of that, 45% of them can't even predict their weekly income. Now, if they can't predict their weekly income, then they can't predict their monthly rent. We had a pretty devastating study yesterday released by Hunger Free America that showed that poverty, not only that poverty has increased, but that hunger is expanding. Our study showed that the workers with unstable schedules are twice as likely to go hungry. In New York City, they found that workers with unstable schedules were three times more likely to be evicted than those with stable schedules. So this is an issue that is one that is squarely within the legislative authority. It's one that makes a lot of sense for us. It makes sense as a workers' issue, as a women's issue, as a poverty issue, as a job quality issue. And we've been really driven by stories like Earlene and moms like Symphony, who testified about how terrifying it is to try to raise your children or take care of your family members and not simply know a basic decent fact of working, which is what your schedule is.
Well, let me get to Earlene in on the conversation. As I mentioned, you have been in the housekeeping world for more than 25 years. What kind of hour, looking at your schedule, help us understand how far ahead you know what your hours are.
Well, I would say that in the hotel that I'm in now,
right,
they do put the schedule out on Monday. And that's like a week before our schedule starts.
So you know for the next week, yes.
But in times like right now, this right before the holidays, it gets really slow. And so basically they put you on call. And that means that you just sitting at home waiting for someone to call you.
And they might say, Earlene, we need you tomorrow or we need you this afternoon. I mean, how
right.
How much
they call
you,
they give you a call, or they're supposed to give you a call and let you know if you're going to work. We would prefer if they could call us maybe a couple of days before and say, hey, listen, you need to work. It's Tuesday. You need to work Thursday. But that's not how I go. So it's basically me sitting around like, and I can't schedule doctor's appointments or anything like that because I don't know if I got to work or if I do, when I got to work, you know. And so that it just makes everything difficult, more difficult.
You raise a couple of children, three children. When you were younger, if I can put it that mm-hmm. way, what was it like then trying to manage work and also childcare?
Well, before they all got into school, I would say the childcare issue was really bad. It's basically, even till today, you know, they charge you $1 a minute if you're late for picking up your children. And then it's after a certain time in the morning, if you're not there to drop them off, then you don't get to drop them off that day. So it's like, okay, I'm on call mm-hmm. and they don't call me in the morning. So I'm like, okay, I don't have to work. At least in my mind, that's how I feel. But then they call me and it's like 10 o'clock in the morning. And now the daycare is full and they're saying I can't drop my child off. So I'm stuck. I'm like, okay, now I can't come in because I can't drop the child off at the daycare center. But let's just say they do call me in and I'm able to go in. If I don't get out of there on time, then that means that I have to pay $1 a minute. Right now, I'm talking to workers that get off 2 hours or so after, or even 30 minutes. Let's just say 30 minutes sure. after their time. And the fact is, it takes them, that's 30 minutes already, that's $30. But then it's take them another 30 minutes to even get to the daycare center. So that's $60 that they have to pay already. You know, and if you even work that 30-minute overtime, that money is going straight to daycare. So it's not beneficial to you. You know, you're losing money and you're just making more money for the daycare.
Mark, let me get you in on the conversation. And what we heard from Helen Gim was she sees this bill solving a number of problems in Philadelphia, obviously affecting people like Earlene and their 130,000 hourly workers in these various industries. How do you see this bill?
Well, I actually, you know, see this as a very positive movement, because when you look at the economy in the numbers, and I'm sure most of your listeners, when they've driven around the city, they've also seen, you know, this is a city that is relatively prosperous. Certainly not every part of the city, but over time, the unemployment rate's been falling. Job growth, when you look at that, it's been growing faster in the city than it has in the rest of the state of Pennsylvania, which is sort of an unusual thing. This is a city that likes to think down of itself sometimes. You know, things are terrible here, but actually the economy's performing quite well. However, when you look deeper into some of that data, in particular looking at trends in income, what you do see is that there's been a lot of income growth for the top 20% of families in this city, but really the bottom 60% actually have incomes today that are lower than their counterparts back before the recession began. And I think that sort of highlights that there are segments of the economy where people are working and they're just either earning wages that are too low or they're not able to get enough hours. And I think when you look across the country, places like California, which are more fortunate than us in the sense that they're moving to a minimum wage of $15 an hour, their frontier of where they're going is looking at precisely what Gim's legislation is going to do, is trying to find ways to lift hours.
Well, and we should underscore this, which is that Philadelphia has the highest poverty rate among large cities, the 10 largest cities in the country. Philadelphia has that highest rate. And I looked at some numbers recently, and it has essentially been unchanged in spite of efforts from various administrations. Mark, is that part of what we're talking about here?
It is absolutely. I mean, the poverty rate actually has declined a little bit.
But just a little bit.
Just a little bit. I think that's important to, you know, and that sort of catches everyone off guard because, again, you look around this city and you see that it is growing. It is performing well. But again, it highlights that growth by itself in the city, you know, is not going to be the engine that's going to lower the poverty rate. The poverty rate's still over 20%, even when the economy is really, really strong. You need efforts to sort of target people who are employed, but are living in poverty.
Right.
You know? And the way to do that is to lift their wages, which we can't do because Harrisburg has decided that that's a decision for this General Assembly. But you can affect hours, particularly for service workers. And when you look at the data, it's quite clear that although the unemployment rate is low in the city, we have a very elevated what's called an underemployment rate.
Right.
And it's, in particular, that biggest chunk of that group of people who don't have enough work are precisely people who have part-time jobs, but they report to the Bureau of Labor Statistics that I'd like to work, I'm available to work full-time, I just can't find a full-time work. And
yeah, Helen Gim, you want to add something?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most profound statistics that came out of the report yesterday from Hunger Free America is that 80% of the individuals who reported being hungry, 240,000 working Philadelphians report that they're employed. And that these are actually people who are working and still going hungry. They don't make enough money to put food on the plate. And I think what this calls to attention is that there's no greater stigma and, you know, issue that has so many biases around it than poverty. You know, there's a lot of stereotypes, biases, and stigmas that get associated with it, overwhelmingly focused in on the individual who is poor, rather than the entities that allow or profit from that individual's poverty. And what I think we're trying to say is that I know businesses know better. I've met with lots of businesses all across the city of Philadelphia who say that they would never, do this kind of abusive scheduling practices, that this is well known within some of the larger companies to save on labor costs. It's unconscionable. And they know that they can fix it, including industry lobbyists and others who recognize that it's a scheduling software, it's management practices. This is a very, very basic fix. And so, you know, what I think we need to think about is that this issue of poverty is not something in which we have to throw up our hands, be helpless, blame those who are struggling with it, but look around, be a little bit more smart and strategic, recognize the factors that are driving poverty in our city. And a lot of it has to be reforming our service sector work. We can't just say any job is a good job at any cost to any individual as long as it creates profit for the company itself.
Earlene, we have about a minute here before our break here, but I'm just curious, what kinds of hours that you generally work as you look across a couple of weeks, and would you like full-time employment?
Well, I can't. Right now, I would say that I would refer to the workers that I'm actually organizing, and they're looking at, even if you say they make in, let's just say they make $16 an hour,
right,
and then they work 35 hours a week. But that is not consistent, right? And so it's basically like this Fair Work Week will make it where as though workers know what their hours are and their guaranteed hours. Because if you look at it, even if I'm making $16 an hour, if I'm not actually working 40 hours a week every week, then that means that the budget that I'm living on is just out the window, right? And it means that, you know, I'm going to be losing hours. I'm going to be making ways, though I got to steal from Rob Peter to pay Paul to pay my bills or to buy food for my house or to just pay my rent or anything like that. So it's basically, I really love this bill for the fact that it's going to give workers 2 weeks of time.
Hold on to that thought only because we are coming up on our break and we're talking about the Fair Work Week bill. It will be voted on by Philadelphia City Council the end of this month, November 29th. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we're talking about the Fair Work Week bill. It's aimed at giving hourly service workers in Philadelphia more control over their schedules. We're talking about what it would mean for them, for their employers, and the city economy. A quick re-identification here of our guest, Helen Gim, is City Councilwoman at Large and introduced the Fair Work Week legislation. Earlene Bly is a housekeeper at the Wyndham Hotel. She's also a union organizer at the Philadelphia Marriott downtown. Mark Price is labor economist at Keystone Research Center. And listening in and joining us is Melissa Bova. She is vice president of government affairs at the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association. Melissa Bova, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Can you understand the stresses of hourly workers who have to wait by their phone to know whether they're going to be working the next day or even the next week?
Absolutely. And to be honest, I think that there is a misunderstanding in terms of how the business community is responding to this legislation. I think by reflex, council and people in the community think that the business community is always the community of no. And we have really listened to what Councilwoman Helen Gim has said. We've taken that into consideration, and we also support a piece of legislation that will achieve the goal of giving our employees the predictability that they want, the ability to know how many hours they're going to work week to week, the ability to pick up extra hours when they wish. We support all of those tenets of the bill. On the other side, we also feel that there is another segment of the industry that look for flexibility, and we want to craft a bill that gives the predictability that the service industry needs, but also allow those people who work in the service industry for flexibility, the flexibility they want to adjust their schedules as they wish.
Well, let me give Helen Gimmett and our guests a chance to respond to that. Can you have, is it possible to have flexibility and predictability?
Yeah, I think that this bill reflects a really great compromise that I think Melissa and others have been at the table for the last several months. What we were able to do is really craft a broad-based table to talk through the issues of unpredictable scheduling, its impact, understand the boundaries, and really craft a compromise bill that I think meets the needs of both flexibility and scheduling. But at the same time, like, I just can't underscore about how outraged I am by Arlene's stories of being on call, the idea and the reality that for so many workers that there are abusive practices that are currently in play, that people are waiting by the phone, desperate for hours, desperate to work, for whom their childcare subsidies, their rent, and being able to put food on the table and a roof over their heads relies on their ability to get work. And we've got employers who are, some employers, and too many, who know better, can do better, and you know, this law will help them.
Well, it
get
sounds
there.
Like there is some agreement then between you and Melissa Bova.
I do think we'll have a good compromise bill in place. It'll push the industry a little bit, but I think we'll get there, and I'm glad that we have had such a long process to work this through.
Yeah, Arlene, you want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing about the flexibility part, right? As a worker, what I've come to know in working in all the hotels, whether it's union or non-union, is that when it comes to flexibility, is they want you to be flexible for them, and they're not flexible when it comes to you and your needs, far as doctor's appointments or having to go to your child's school or anything like that. It's always the more flexible for them. Like, when they need you, you have to be there. You have to be ready, but not when you have things to do in your life. And I feel like most of my life has been spent just at my job. I spend more time there than I do with my children, you know, and I think it needs to be a more even slate.
Well, Melissa, is that possible?
We think it is. I mean, we support the facets in the bill that deal with on-call, and you have to look at this a little bit more holistically. There are certain concerns in the hotel industry, but the bill doesn't just affect the hotel industry. It affects the restaurant industry and the retail industry, and especially for the restaurant industry, which is really the majority of our membership. That flexibility is key for people who work in our industry, and we conducted our own survey where 83% of those surveyed said that they're in this job for the flexibility and they want to be able to adjust their schedules. So I think that the legislation can achieve a goal of ensuring that the employer cannot make the employee work when they're not available, mm-hmm. cannot tell them they have to come in when they're not available. I think that is the goal of the legislation, to stop kind of the strong arming that is perceived to be had on behalf of the employer. We believe that there should be an ability for an employee who says, I want to close out those five tables that I'm serving because I want those tips, to make that decision and on their own behalf because they want to do it. Currently, we don't believe that the legislation gets to that point. We want the ability for servers to pick up shifts. If a mass communication is issued offering available shifts, because let's say a catering event has 50 extra people and you need some people to cover the shifts, not telling employees they have to work, but saying these are shifts that are available if you want them. And I think there is a way to control the employer, not to strong arm, but also to give employees the ability to craft their schedules as they wish as well.
Mark Price, let me get you back in on the conversation here. Other cities have done them, none quite as large as Philadelphia. But what has been the result when there is their version of a fair work week?
We don't have a lot of strong evidence to sort of have a comprehensive assessment. These are relatively new pieces of legislation. I think Some of the researchers, particularly at the council hearing, Professor Anna Haley from Rutgers, testified on some of their research in looking at how employers are in these scheduling issues. And one of the things that came out of her research is that she observed within the same industry, sometimes within the same franchise, managers who were basically sort of following the lines of legislation that Helen has introduced in terms of giving workers notice, giving workers the opportunity to work more hours. But within that same franchise, there would be another manager that was strictly managing in terms of sort of flexibility for the employer, all right, and not thinking about that there are workers who have families and kids and need to take care of those kids and need some certainty about scheduling, but also that are struggling to get enough hours. And I think that sort of highlights, you know, it's good to hear that, the Restaurants Association is certainly eager not to be part of the community of no. And I think that recognizes there are good managers and there are good employers who work hard to sort of both make money and profit, which we like, but also take care of workers and make sure that workers have some flexibility. And I think you can get there. And the way you do it precisely is you have to set minimum standards. And
Helen, let me go back to you because I want to make sure our listeners understand that this applies to, as I understand it, companies with more than 250 employees and also with 30 or more locations. So it's not, you know, the local restaurant that was started by mom and pop a couple of years ago. Right?
Exactly. This is focused in on some of the, you know, chain restaurants and corporations that have benefited the most in this economy, that have, you know, registered significant growth and are benefiting, and their workers, though, are not. And so we really wanted to be smart about the bill. We know that we're setting a floor, and we want to do it with the companies that have the technological and managerial capacity to really handle this work. And we definitely heard from many groups that they certainly know that they can. They have the ability to schedule the way that they need to because of advances in technology and software. When the Gap, for example, did a 7-month study on fair scheduling, profits went up, you know, turnover and attrition went down, and stability was increased. And so I don't think this is rocket science. I think people understand it. The choice for unstable scheduling is a choice of profits over people's lives. And that's what I think we're trying to address here.
Let me quote something from the Chamber of Commerce. This goes back to June. The Chamber of Commerce of Greater Philadelphia serious concerns with the legislation introduced today that will create a rigid mandate for employees and employers related to their work schedules. This is yet another anti-growth, out-of-sync initiative introduced in City Council. And that was a couple of months ago, Helen Gim. What's the status, as you understand it, from the Chamber of Commerce of Greater Philadelphia?
Well, I can't speak for the Chamber of Commerce, but I think Melissa and others who've been, you know, really engaged folks, and there are a number of members of the Chamber who've also been really engaged on this issue as well, have certainly come forward and said that, you know, they're working on what we believe to be a really good bill that reflects the kind of balance between flexibility and scheduling fairness that really is at the heart of worker protections here.
And did you want to add something, Erling?
No, I mean, I was just sitting here thinking about, you know, what you were saying about how the economy and the city is growing and, you know.
This is to Mark Price, yeah.
Right. And I was just, I didn't want to interrupt, but I was just thinking about it. And I was like, you know, yeah, the city is growing. They're building all around the city, right?
You can see the cranes everywhere, right?
Everywhere. I mean, everywhere you go, you have to make a detour, you know. But when I look at the neighborhood that I live in, and I look at the neighborhood that my family and friends live in, we don't see that growth, right? And when I think about the Fair Work Week schedule, what I think about is my daughter, the 21-year-old, and my 23-year-old, the one that is working in the restaurant industry, right? But she's working 5 days a week. But mm-hmm. Guess what? She's only working 4 to 5 hours a day. So now her paycheck a week is only $160. So that means she's living with me. And I'm not making, you know, I make enough if I was just taking care of myself. But having two children living with me and my grandchildren is because they're not making enough money to be able to be out there on their own and support themselves. So I have to help them. So that's why I was thinking, I'm like, you know, the city is growing, the economy is growing, but it's not growing for people mm-hmm. like me. You know, and I see the growth all around the city, but I don't see it far as my family. I don't see it in my neighborhood. You know, I see how they're beautifying all around downtown. I wish they would come to my neighborhood and do that. But I really feel as though if everybody was to be able to have a schedule, I understand the flexibility. People should be able to have flexibility. So you could go to your manager and say, hey, I know I have to work this day, but would it be possible if I could switch with someone else? That's always there. But to have a steady schedule and to know what your income is for the next month or whatever, you know, you can make your budget and you can make, like, if you need time down for entertainment, anything, you know, all of that, if you know what your income is going to be. And that's what the Fair Work Week does.
Well, yeah, just let me give you a chance, Mark, just because Arlene referenced you there. I mean, it seems like there's a lot riding on this bill.
Absolutely. I think especially for, you know, those folks who are really in this service sector struggling to get enough hours, this is going to be an important way to get more and to have more voice. So I think absolutely. And, you know, what's the point of growth if it doesn't benefit every one of us in the larger economy, right? I mean, we're all here. We're part of this city. We make it what it is, and we all should share as it grows. And I think that's really what Helen's proposal will do.
Well, and Melissa, I know we have to say goodbye to you in just a couple of moments, but any final thoughts? And does the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association have concerns about this, you know, this pretty serious income divide here in Philadelphia, and whether this is a bill that can address that?
Absolutely. And as I said, we support the concept of the bill. We think that there is a middle ground that can be had. We're very cognizant within our industry, and as was just previously said, when you are seeing a resurgence in a community, restaurants are the first business that go and invest in a community and help turn it around. And I think what we're trying to do here is recognizing the deep poverty that exists in Philadelphia, by also recognizing that if we don't have job growth within the city of Philadelphia, we're not solving that problem as well. So I think we can, as I said, solve all of this and take a step forward by ensuring we're protecting our employees, but also ensuring that there's the flexibility and the ability for businesses to operate as well and to continue to grow and continue to want to invest in the city. I think we're getting closer with this bill. I think we have a few more, and I'll call it tweaks, that we think that would make it better, but I think we can get there, and I think we could have a piece of legislation that other cities like Chicago, who are looking at this type of legislation, will look at and see, wow, Philadelphia really did it right, and we would really like to see that happen in Philadelphia and have us be a leader on the issue as it pertains to encouraging job growth and solving the poverty problem.
Well, Melissa Bova, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's Vice President of Government Affairs at the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association with her thoughts about the Fair Work Week bill. Are you surprised to hear that, Helen Gim?
No. I mean, we've been working together for a while. Okay. And I think, you know, again, that's sort of the sausage making of legislative politics. But really, this bill was driven by stories like Arlene. And it was driven by the stories of young people who talked about having to drop out of college because they couldn't balance the job that was paying for college to be able to go to college. It's driven by, you know, the stories of thousands of people who came forward, who told them and are helping us reframe our understanding about what we have to do about poverty. And what we know is that fair scheduling and this bill is one of the absent, you know, a rise in the minimum wage, but even concurrent with one. This is one of the most powerful municipal tools, and I won't wait. I'm not going to wait for Harrisburg. I'm not waiting for D.C. Too many of our folks, too many of our children, too many of our neighbors rely on us to be a lot more aggressive, forward-thinking, and proactive about one of the most intractable issues that is holding Philadelphia back from true success.
Let me read some comments here. A tweet: when I was a young adult in the 80s working in retail, fast food, and restaurants, I often worked two or three jobs, and each job gave me a set schedule. Now my two sons are hourly, and they don't find out their schedules until 2 days before the start of the work week. Mm-hmm. They struggle to plan for doctor appointments, school, and work. And Arlene, that's exactly what you've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Just the difficulty of trying to manage all the details of life when you don't know what your work schedule is.
Absolutely. And you know, sometimes you have to cancel stuff. You can't go, and you just can't have a regular life until you find out what your work life is, you know? And I just think that's really unfair. And just the fact that, you know, wasting time sitting around waiting on someone to call you, it's just, I never understood that concept when I started working and they told me that. And I was just like, so wait a minute, you're saying I got to just sit there and wait for you to call me?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I even offered, like, can I call you? You know, Nate's like, no, because this and that. So it's just a lot of wasted time.
Well, then it seems like there's now data. I mean, there's probably software, technology that can address
some
of this.
And I think one of the most critical points, and thank you very much for that individual who shared that story, is that people have to understand this is a conscious decision by the industry to do this. This isn't how it always was. It is not how it must be, and it does not, and it will not have to be this way in the future. This is a conscious decision to cut labor costs, to keep people on unstable schedules. But what it does is that it puts the burden back on that individual and me as a city council member, that we are compensating and subsidizing industry for these kinds of abusive practices that need to end.
A comment from Jerry. I'm a small business owner. I remortgaged my home to start my business. I don't know if Councilwoman Kim knows what that's like, but what it's like to be responsible for employees with your business at stake. Just to underscore, you're talking about really about chain restaurants.
Exactly.
You're not talking about individuals who have mortgaged their home.
No. And in fact, it's largely because those small businesses, when you only have five or six employees, you're absolutely doing fair scheduling. You know, you're looking out for when those employees can come in and do work. This really has to do with large chain stores that have multiple schedules going on across many different locations. They have the technological capacity to schedule across very complicated types of areas. They choose some of them choose to be abusive about it, and that's what we're trying to end.
And you use the word abusive.
I believe that there are two things at play. One, we absolutely want to end the abusive stuff that is happening with Earlene and on-call scheduling. That is a gross abuse of, I believe, workers, bordering on wage theft, in my personal opinion. But it also sets a higher standard. It recognizes that there needs to be an advanced amount of time. We set it at 10 days for the first year, 14 days by year two. And then and helping workers get access to more hours. Those two things together will change things for a lot of people in the city.
Well, let's take another short break, then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Helen Gim. She is Councilwoman at Large for Philadelphia City Council, introduced the Fair Work Week legislation that's going to be voted on November 29th. Earlene Bly is a housekeeper at the Wyndham Hotel, union organizer at the Philadelphia Marriott downtown. Mark Price, a labor economist at Keystone Research Center. Much more after this short break. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about the Fair Work Week bill that is in Philadelphia City Council, will be voted on later this month. Just to recap here, it calls for employers in the service industry to give their workers advance notice about their schedules, also compensation for last-minute schedule changes, a chance to work additional hours, and protection from retaliation. I'm sure there are more details in it, but that, broadly speaking, is what we are talking about. I do want to get to some more callers and some more comments as well, but let me go back to you, Mark Price. One of the criticisms that I read is that when you do things like this, there are unintended consequences, that you end up reducing the number of part-time jobs. Is that true? I mean, if I'm sure there will be consequences if this is passed, but what do you anticipate?
Sure. And I think, you know, the correct answer to that is that, you know, again, looking at this city, you have lots of employment growth. What you, though, lack is that for a lot of workers, they just can't get enough hours. So really, legislation like this, absolutely, it leads to people having more hours on the job. So I wouldn't worry as much about unintended consequences, because again, when you look across the broader economy, and I think, you know, Melissa Bova's, you know, comments sort of illustrate this, there are employers who get it, and they're good employers. We often call them sort of high road employers. These are people who understand that when their workers have had a good night's sleep, when their kids are happy and healthy, or at least as happy as we can get them, right? That they're better on the job, right? They're more productive.
Absolutely.
And those things pay off for employers. So I think there's always, you know, a lot of concern. You know, Melissa, you know, suggested the community of no in the business community, often sort of saying, oh, these things are terrible. But at the end of the day, you're making workers more productive. That's going to make them better on the job, less training costs. That actually may be good for employers. So I think this is, again, just something that's going to move the economy in a direction, both making workers and their families happier, but also making employers sort of just smarter about how they organize work.
And generally, we've been talking about 130,000 men and women working in this city. Let me just go back to you, Mark, briefly, and then we've got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. If they all wanted to work more hours, are there enough hours for people to work in this city? Do we know?
Are there enough hours?
Let's say everyone wanted to work. I want to work 30 hours a week.
I think the answer, and I apologize for having to give this answer, but the answer is no, there's not enough employment in this city to go around. I mean, just the fact that you know, the employment rate for people in poverty is 23%. There are people who have jobs, and those jobs still don't lift them out of poverty. And poverty is a very conservative standard. There are a lot of people who don't officially make less than $13,000 a year if they're a single person, but they still struggle to get by. They can't afford rent. Maybe they, you know, stay with friends and rely on the local food bank. Those issues are prevalent throughout the economy. So I think, you know, you have to recognize Helen's legislation. It's good. It's going to make incremental progress, but it doesn't really address all the range of problems we have. And there are state responsibilities and there are federal responsibilities. And I think really the great thing about the direction that Philadelphia really has been moving, both the, you know, city council, the mayor, the district attorney's office, this is a city that really is moving in a direction of recognizing that you got to do things differently, right, in order to have better outcomes for people and the larger economy.
Looks like you want to say something just briefly, because as I say, briefly, a lot of people that want to.
You know, the issue is that we can't charity our way out of poverty. And so, you know, relying on marginal measures to do things that don't call into account larger actors is just not going to be possible. So the bill is one step. I think we need to do a lot more. And I'm also a big believer that I can't talk about poverty in terms of wages. I can't talk about it in terms of like absolute numbers. It's really about, can you put food on the table? Can you put a roof over your head? Can you keep your family together? Are you going hungry? And those are the kinds of questions that we need to start holding ourselves to a higher standard too. And I hope that this is where this conversation leads. One other quick thing is, you know, we've got 8 sponsors on the bill, more than 50 organizations that support it as well. And a lot of my investment around the time of this is not because I want to pass a piece of legislation. I really want the public to have a different understanding of this issue and what our responsibilities are and what our complicity is when we don't take action.
Let me get, looks like Sarah to join our conversation. And Sarah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'd like to know if this would also affect the transportation industry. As a driver, we are forced to wait by the phone or wait by our truck computer and not clock in until we know our freight's there, because we only have so many hours to drive a day and we want to make money. I also worked for another company that I had to be by the phone for 24 hours, and I had a 2-hour notice of when they were going to bring me in.
Wow. Was that also trucking, Sarah?
Yes, that was trucking. But trucking was also my ticket out of poverty into the middle class.
I hear you, but obviously came with a price. And I'm seeing Helen Gim shake her head. No, this is really about the service industry in Philadelphia.
Yeah, we focused in on this particular industry mostly because we had seen the bill move in other places. We understood what its boundaries were. I do think, though, that the caller Sarah brings in really important understanding. Again, we're trying to change our understanding of the issue, not just about passing a bill. But if we have more conversations about the ways in which employees are being treated so that they can establish that balance that I think Arlene has talked about so beautifully between their lives and their ability to be productive, good workers, that will be in a better space as well.
Sarah, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read some more comments. A tweet from Brandon says, how much schedule manipulation is motivated by employers evading group health care requirements? Mm-hmm. Arlene, you're nodding your head. And I should say that you're a housekeeper at the Wyndham Hotel. You're also a union organizer at the Philadelphia Marriott downtown. But how much do you think this has to do with benefits? And, you know, once you get over a certain mark, then benefits do are supposed to kick in.
Well, I can only speak from my own personal. I feel as though it has a lot to do with it. If I've seen, far as the organizing, what I've been seeing is a lot of companies are basically not trying to give out full-time hours anymore. They're trying to give out part-time hours. They're getting a lot. They got a lot of temp agencies that they're bringing in. They're even getting rid of whole departments. And you're getting rid of whole departments, but you're not getting rid of the work that those workers were doing. And you're bringing part-time, you're bringing in temp agencies to do that work. So that means that's making you save money, right? But it's also mean you don't have to pay out benefits because they don't technically work for you. They work for an agency. right? So I feel as though, in my own personal opinion, I do feel as though it's a lot about benefits.
Do you think that makes sense, Mark?
I think certainly in individual cases, but I think it's also important to recognize that part-time has been a problem for a long time in the broader economy. It's not just a function of Obamacare and various changes that have been made recently, but certainly that can be an issue. I mean, at the end of the day, what this really comes down to is we have a habit in this economy of not thinking about that we all have lives, right? And for a lot of professional workers out there, a lot of people listening to this show, right, you probably have some flexibility. You have the ability, if you get sick, to take some time off and be paid for it. You have the ability to, you know when your schedule is going to be and to have that flexibility. But for a lot of workers, they don't have
that. They're sitting by
the phone. Exactly. They're sitting by the phone. They, don't know, when they're going to need childcare. They end up getting dinged by penalties, right? And that's another thing to think about here is that there are elements, at least one of the versions of the bill that Helen's putting forward, that simply allow employers, if they want to have this kind of flexibility, they just have to pay a little bit more for it, right? It's sort of, it's very much like overtime, right? When you need more hours to be flexible, absolutely, but you have to pay for it. And the great thing about that from the perspective of an economist is that gives you an incentive to manage better. So if you don't want to pay those premiums, find a way, and there are ways, because there are lots of employers that manage to do it, to reduce your reliance on sort of, running out, burning the, workers at both ends of the candle.
That's the stick part of the carrot and the stick?
Yeah.
Earlene, you want to say something? Then we'll get Sean from Philadelphia
just
to
real
join
quick
us.
On the I definitely agree about the hours thing. But one thing I wanted to bring to your attention is the fact that you do have workers that are not allowed to leave when their shift is over. You know, one thing I do love about my job is that when my time, I work from 8 to 4:30. When my time is up, I get to go home. You have workers right now that are not allowed to do that.
What do they do instead?
Well, they have to stay until the work is done. And so, like being a housekeeper, sometimes you don't have everything you need to complete your task as far as linen or anything. You know, you have to make sure everything that belongs in that room is in that room before you can actually punch it in and say it's done. So you have a lot of times when you don't have everything you need, and that's not on you because you're there to clean that room. But everybody is trying to do their job. So if I don't have what I need to finish that room, and then you bring it to me at 4 o'clock and I'm supposed to be out at 4:30. And now I have like 7 to 8 rooms that I cleaned, but they don't have the linen in it. The beds are not done. So now you're telling me I have to go back and do those rooms. And that's not, you know what I'm saying? So I know workers that start at 8 in the morning and don't leave until 8 at night sometimes, or 9 o'clock at night sometimes, all because if they try to leave at 4:30, they get written up, you know. And
do they get paid overtime for those extra hours or regular time?
Well, I'm not sure if it's overtime or regular time, but the fact is sometimes they don't care. They want to go home at 4:30, right? And if just because they didn't have what they need to complete the job, they have to stay. And that's what the Fair Work Week would be, whereas they can leave when they are supposed to be able to leave.
Let me get Sean from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Sean. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. I just wanted to thank you for having this conversation.
Sure.
I'm a medical student in Philadelphia. And I just, was thinking as y'all were talking that this issue really contributes to systemic racism and classism. I just think about all the time I've observed doctors and other medical professionals kind of comment on how, patients in lower socioeconomic statuses can't keep appointments and how it must just be because they don't know how to manage their time or don't know how to manage appointments. And really, this issue has revealed to me how, obviously it's so much more complicated than that. And I think not only will this bill potentially help make the lives a lot more predictable for, workers in these industries, but moreover will help address sort of systemic racism and classism endemic in many fields, including the medical profession.
Well, Sean, that's really interesting. Let me give Helen Gim a chance to respond to that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, this bill was driven by the stories of people who experienced the pain of not being able to have a fair schedule. And it's many of whom experienced abusive practices. Many of them are Black, Brown, and immigrant women working in our hotel and restaurant industries. Many of them are young people of color working in retail and who told stories about how they are trying to be, they show up and their shifts get canceled. You know, they ask for more hours and then they're denied. They hold open their schedules. They won't make appointments because they're afraid that someone's going to call them in and that they have to constantly be on call. This is not a healthy economy and it's not a healthy society. And so those two things together, I think Sean points out, it has grave impacts on the healthcare field. It has grave impacts on education. Parents who are not able to make appointments, who can't take care and look out for when their children are in distress or in need. It's a major issue with our social workers who often say that their ability to reunite families relies on parents being able to make appointments. But when those parents are struggling to cobble together so many jobs, they can't do that. So it's a powerful issue, and it absolutely is a Black women's issue. It's absolutely an immigrant issue. It's a women's issue. This is a very it has the power to really impact the way we look at people and change our understanding of how and why people are struggling so hard.
Sean, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read a couple of more comments here. One from Scott saying, a relative of mine worked at a fast food restaurant after he lost his home in Hurricane Sandy. He went in with the flu one day because his employer, who didn't give him insurance, told him he'd be fired if he didn't have a doctor's note for missing work. Just, you know, one more story here. Comment from Ian, hashtag Fair Work Week PHL. It's the most important anti-poverty initiative the city has ever undertaken in several years. It's unabashedly pro-worker, pro-child, pro-Philadelphia policy. So Ian has obviously signed on to your legislation, Helen Gim. Let me know, pick up something. And Mark, you talk about Philadelphia's overall economy. And Earlene, you talk about the fact that we see cranes all over the city, and clearly there are some parts of the city that are doing really well. How much does then investing in education and making sure that children are educated to the point where they can get full-time work or work that pays, you know, $26 an hour?
No, go ahead.
I think that
I do got something to say.
I'm sure you do, Earlene.
Thank you, Earlene.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's, you know, it is extremely important. You know, again, when you think about just the range of issues involved here, I mean, people not being able to get enough hours, this is one piece of that problem. In some of the work that we've been doing looking at the broader economy, I think it also comes back to your point about, you know, is there enough work for everyone that wants work? And I think the answer remains there is not enough work for everyone that wants work in this city. And you could eliminate all the rules and regulations in the broader economy, and that wouldn't change. In fact, it'd probably get worse because, again, what you're doing is hurting people who, you know, can't pay their bills. They get thrown out of their house. They don't spend money at the local restaurant. So absolutely, when you're making investments in education, you're going to lose those investments if, when those kids graduate, they end up graduating into an economy where they can't get enough employment or hours.
Earlene, I'm giving you the last word, about 30 seconds or so.
Well, I was just thinking about what you said about the education system. I truly feel as though that with the fact that them closing so many schools in this city, everything to me, it seems that it's systematic, right? You have, how do you expect people to get good jobs when you're closing the schools? And the schools that do stay open, you're doubling the class sizes. So the teacher can't give that child or my child, my grandchild, any individual attention that they might need if they're struggling. And then when they get out of school, you know, they got to go to a neighborhood that's not thriving and that's not being looked at and being cared for by the city. You understand what I'm saying?
So I do.
It's, I don't know if you heard of the Black Work Matters report, but the same people that are working in the industry are the same people that are living in these zip codes, right, where the most of the poverty is in this city. You understand what I'm saying? And I live in one of those neighborhoods, so I know.
Yes.
And all I'm saying is, like, those are the neighborhoods where all the schools were closed.
We could go on, and I know because I've interviewed Helen Gim so many times about education, we have to leave it there. Helen Gim, Earlene Bly, Mark Price, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you,
Radio
Marty.
Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.